Last week, Russell spoke about change, and I was sitting there listening to this message, a really good message, which you can listen to online if you haven't heard it. But one of the things I kept coming back to for me was thinking about what stops us changing. And I know probably one of the biggest things that stops me changing is lack of motivation to change. And often the lack of motivation to change comes from actually a lack of hope in there. You kind of think, well, I've done it before. So therefore, and look, it didn't really change anything. Nothing much happened. I got fit. I lost weight. For me, that's a great one. I lost weight before, but it all came back on again. So what's the point of... lack of motivation, but also lack of hope in there. You know, your life experience tells you that things don't always work out the way that you hope that they would work out. And because of that, you hope that things will get better, or hope seems to get put to one side a little bit because of the lack of hope. So I sensed last week also that there are a few people who actually need to hear a message of hope at the beginning of the year. So I'm hoping that this morning you will have a message of hope there. And I know, because I know you, that many of you are struggling with various things. Some of you have got quite serious health issues. Some of you have been reeling from financial pressure that is constantly chewing at you. Some of you have just had like never-ending things just keep happening and just keep on going, it begins to be draining. It begins to, for you to lose hope. And, you kind of like figure that the enemy is using you for target practice at the moment. And others of you have had stuff that's happened in the past that you just can't move past. Things, we know the things. Things obviously like abuse or a death or a relationship breakdown or a loss of somebody. It's hard sometimes to have hope. And you find it happening in the strangest situation. You think you're past it and then something happens and you think, oh, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm not past that. So this morning what I want to do is have a look at a psalm. Just one psalm. Psalm 121. Okay, and we're going to get that up on the screen. Woo! There we go. Look. I'll just read it through once. I lift up my eyes to the hills. From where will my help come? My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth. He will not let your foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber. He who keeps Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. The sun shall not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in, from this time on and forevermore. That's a pretty cool verse, isn't it? That's a really good psalm of hope that's actually in there. Now, with a lot of verses, we kind of like reiterate on a number of occasions that we can't just take out a verse of the Bible and apply it to us. You know, like the verse from Jeremiah that we all love, "For I know the plans and purposes I have for you," is actually to a specific group of people at a specific time, and we do. I mean, there's no point in concentrating on the one and Judas went and hung himself. We could all all concentrate on that one, but it's much better to concentrate on the positive ones. But actually, the verse in Jeremiah was to a specific group, and it's hard to actually take that, or we shouldn't really just take that on and say, well, that applies to me automatically. This one you can, which is awesome. Okay, this is one of the Psalms of Ascent. Now, there were 15 Psalms of Ascent, and they actually start from Psalm 120 and go through to 134. That's right. And that what they were designed for was for pilgrimage. So people who are going into or up to Jerusalem and walking to Jerusalem would be saying these psalms as they made their journey. And each psalm is within itself, it actually has steps. It builds up as you read it through. So every one of those psalms, there's actually like an important word or phrase that gets repeated in there, and it builds up and builds up and builds up. And actually each together, those 15 psalms also do the same. They build up and they build up. And so it builds anticipation. It builds excitement. It builds, hopefully, hope. And it builds faith as people approach the throne of God. That's what they were doing. Now, back in the day that they were using these psalms in order to... In fact, I mean, people still use these psalms today. When we went to Israel last year... Actually, have a look at this. I will just show you. Hang on, next one. Oh, there we go. That's a picture. That's a picture. Believe it or not, that's one of the hills. So this Psalm 121 is actually out of order. It's number two in the terms of 120 is where the Psalms of Ascent start. But Psalm 121 is actually the last one, not the second one. It's the one that they sung in anticipation, just as they reached the foothills of Jerusalem. So they had walked and they'd walked, and this is the one where just as they reach the hills, they look up and they say, I lift my eyes to the hills. Where will my hope come from? Now, there's a double thing with that as well, because they knew that these hills that they were looking at is where Zion was. This was the place that their hope was in. So the hills and the mountains in front of them was. But it wasn't the hills that they had hope for in. It was their God that they had hope in. And so, but, I mean, these don't look like massive hills, but that is Temple Mount, that is Mount Zion. And actually, if we look at the next picture, this is the view in the other direction. This is, that's the Mount of Olives, actually from the picture that you saw previously. That these are the hills that they were seeing. There probably weren't quite so many houses on them when they went up to them. Probably a few more shepherds, trees and sheep and things like that. But there was the anticipation and the excitement as they approached God. Their hope was beginning to rise. They felt their faith rising. Here they had walked, they'd been saying these psalms on each day that they walked, they walked, they walked, and then they begin to actually see the hills. And this is the one, the day before they were actually going to walk up to the temple. There's some argument of whether this was pre-temple or, you know, and such forth, but certainly to Mount Zion, where their expectation was that they were going to have connection with God, the presence of God, and the hope was there as they walked up. So this was the day before. All that anticipation, everything was coming from them. So, I lift my eyes to the hills. From where will my hope come? My help comes from the Lord. He made heaven and earth. What this is saying is my hope isn't in the hills that I'm looking at. My hope is in the God who made the hills that I'm looking at. That's what this actually means. My help comes from the Lord who made heaven and earth, who made these hills. We can go on to the next slide. He will not let your foot be moved. Now, remember that it was actually walking onto these mountains, onto these hills, and you know, it's quite uneven ground. But he would not let the foot be moved. He who keeps you will not slumber, and he who keeps Israel will neither slumber or sleep. Now, this was to the people of Israel. But anybody know who's the term Israel there? What was Israel, or the person, what was his name before he was Israel? Jacob. And in Jacob, in Genesis, God spoke to Jacob. And this is what he said to him. He said, I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and the God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, I will give to you and to your offspring, and your offspring shall be like the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your offspring. And this is the important bit. Know that I am with you and will keep you wherever you go and will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So when in this psalm it says, he who keeps Israel will neither slumber or sleep, this is what it's actually harping back to. It's a covenant promise of God that God gave to Jacob, and actually saying, I am with you and I will keep you wherever you go. There was also the promise and the expectation of the land that they were looking at, as of the hills, that they were going to be theirs forevermore. It wasn't going to be an occupied land. That's where the Messiah was coming from. This is a promise to us and to all generations. So that, this he who keeps Israel will neither slumber or sleep was a major reference to the promises that God had given the people. There was reason to be hopeful. They had hope for a God that had delivered them from Egypt, that had promised that if they were faithful to him, then he would be faithful. His faithfulness stayed whatever happened. But also the promise that the Messiah was coming was all in this pilgrimage, in this walk that they were doing, as they stepped forth, as they took each step, as they looked to the hills, their faith rose and their whole being was looking at that, but remembering that it was the God who created this who their hope was in. And then it builds up again. So each line is supposed to almost be like a step, a climb. You're actually stepping to the holy place. That's what part of the pilgrimage was. And so it then says, the Lord is your keeper. The Lord is your shade at your right hand. That's an interesting one. Shade at your right hand. Any thoughts on what? Yeah, there's lots in the Bible about the right hand. Benjamin actually means son of the right hand. My son, Benjamin, that's what Benjamin means. So right hand, there's two things. First one is there's actually the blessing of God is through the right hand. But it's also the one that you carry your sword with in battle. So there's a blessing, but there is also a sword there, and the commentators kind of like vacillate, or there's two opinions as to whether God is saying that even the blessings of God, actually, he protects you from them to a degree. He puts them in the shade when you are progressing to God, and your hope is in there. Actually, sometimes too much blessing can be overpowering in some ways. Well, there you go. I'm left-handed too, yeah. But it's still symbolic of what's in there. But the other one, which possibly I lean towards, is the fact of the shade of the right hand is actually putting protection when you go into battle as well. It's the shade he's actually protecting. We'll have a look at it in a minute, but you'll see there's some key words in this, and there is about a protection when you're going into battle, just putting shade on your right hand as you're trying to take ground, as you're moving forward. Let's just have a look, because there are each psalm of Ascent has some key phrases. This is no exception. And actually, when you look at them, they're fairly obvious. The first one is this. Okay? It's very much about Yahweh. Very, very much about who the Lord is, declaring who the Lord is. This is actually a key for building hope and building faith in our lives. It is actually declaring who the God, who we know God to be in situations. So where we're lacking hope, where we're lacking motivation, one of the keys is to actually declare who God is and that God is Lord over it as well. A very important key. The other key word in this is, there you go. So, he who keeps Israel, the Lord is your keeper. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in. There's something about, you know, what's the inner castle? What's the place where they put all the valuables? What's it called? There you go. And it's basically a sense in this of God being the place of refuge, the place that is protected, the place where, it's secure. So going back to what we were talking about earlier about the shadow, about him being the shade for your right arm, there's actually that word shade can also be translated keep. He keeps your right arm, he protects it, he puts a barrier around it as well. So there's a sense of the Lord is our keeper. That's, if you want to sum up this verse, it's the Lord is our protector, the Lord is our keeper. It is from him that everything is there. And just quickly, going back to that verse from Genesis, if you just have a look at this next, okay, first of all, it starts with declaring who the Lord is, and then the promise is, I am with you and will keep you. So this psalm is actually very much referring back to the promise and the covenant that God had with his people. Now, this is where it gets a little tricky, and I want to address this head on. When we look at our hope being in the Lord, who is our keeper, what do we do with those experiences and things that happen that are very, very real? My guess is all of us can point to situations that have not worked out the way that we thought God should have worked it out. They have ended, I mean, some of them are final. I mean, obviously, death is a good one where the, that's not a good one, but if you understand what I mean, it's death is final. And when you're believing for something and it is dead, it is dead. There's no getting around that. And finding answers in that. So I don't want to bypass the fact of how hard it is to declare hope in God when our hopes have previously been dashed. And hopes in God have been dashed. It's a reality. And, sometimes Christians, I think, try to wash over this and say, well, God is good. He is good. But stuff happens, and there is no answer. And the world looks at it. I mean, the world looks at it and says, I don't know whether any of you have seen Stephen Fry. And his response is, what would he want to say to God? He basically says, if there is a God, he is the most vindictive God. He wants to like shout at him, have a go at God. Because how could he let these things happen, such evil on the earth, if there is a God? And none of us are impervious to those thoughts, I believe. I think most of us have thoughts at some point that we have to bring back into line or not, as to what we think about God and why he's allowed things to happen. My point for this morning is to say, those things do make it harder to have hope in verses like this that says, I am with you always. I will guard you in every situation. I will protect you. I will protect your going in and your coming out. And your. I will protect all of these things. I will give you a firm footing. When our experience tells us, well, that doesn't always seem true, does it? So what's the reality? And how do we process that? Because it's almost like positive thinking. We try to tell ourselves, well, God is, God's in control. He's going to come through. But then that thing, whatever that is, happens. That person dies. Our marriage breaks down. Our finances are out of control. And sometimes through no fault of our own. So where is God in those situations? How do we relate these verses to our experience? A lot of times, we kind of like put it to one side and we have a disconnect with it. Well, I can't explain this, but my hope is still in God. Sometimes, however much we try that, there is a bit of angst towards God as well, I think. I mean, I've had angst towards God. Am I the only one that does that? And it doesn't, I can assure you, it doesn't change if you're the pastor or the leader of a church. These questions still go through your mind. Is God, where were you? We were believing for this. What happened here? Why did you let that happen? Is it only me that thinks like that? So what? No. Why would we do it again? If our experience is that we're believing for something in faith, or for a healing, or for finances, or for whatever it is, and it gets dashed, why would you go again? And how many times does it take for it to happen a few times before you don't go again? You might get up a second time, you might get up a third time, but how do you keep going in those situations? So what's the reality? You're hoping for answers now, aren't you? I think that is a major... Yeah. We're looking for instant answers. We look for with temporal eyes. We think we know what is best for us. This doesn't necessarily excuse me. I can only talk about my personal experiences and what I have found. But I've kind of like learnt over time that if I surrender to God, even in that battle, even in that the more hope I have in God, the more at peace I have in those situations where there is no answer. There is a wrestling that needs to happen, and I've wrestled with God. I mean, there's been a few things over the years. I mean, I've had mental health issues, I've had financial issues, I've had, my kids were very close to death when they were born, twin boys being born 9 months premature. Wow. 9 weeks premature. Yes. I remember, I mean, we've all got these situations. But I've learnt that actually I need, the weird thing is you need situations that are completely unreasonable in order to really trust in God. And you actually have to come to a point where, despite the evidence that tells you otherwise, which is sometimes a reality, despite the evidence, you have to say, you know what, God? I do trust you. You are And you know, the world. I get this. The world points at the things and says, "How could a good God let that happen to you? You believe in God, and this stuff is happening, and it's awful." And on face value, you can accept that. But you have to come. It is a choice. And we also have to remember, it is a faith that we have. It is, and our faith in God, actually, the bottom line is that surrendering all. It's even though we don't understand, even though this stuff happened, even though I lost this, even though that person died, my marriage broke down, even though I choose to put my trust and my hope in God. And this verse, I believe, it is part of raising hope in us. And is it positive confession? I think there is a place for positive confession. I really do. What's the opposite? Or what's, why not do that? Faith comes from hearing and actually speaking out things. It builds faith. But is it just in your mind? I don't think it is just in your mind. I actually think choosing to take these steps, this is a physical thing of where they were taking a pilgrimage, but part of it is a process in our minds as well. It's choosing to actually look at the situation and go, where is my help going to come from? Look at these hills. Is it going to come from that? Is it going to come from the government? Is it going to come from a doctor? Where's my help going to come from? But it's choosing to take the steps forward and to say, despite what may or may not have happened, despite what may happen, even in this situation, I put my hope, I put my trust in my God. The more I trust and surrender, the more my hope in Him increases. Because you've got nothing else left. You really don't. It is a leap of faith. The more you just lie back into His arms and say, I don't get this, but I trust in You, is the very thing that builds hope and builds faith. It seems counterintuitive, but it is the reality of it. The more we learn to just go, God. And one of the other things that I've learnt as well, sometimes you need to forgive God. Now, forgiveness is not actually, I'll give you the definition of forgiveness. It's to stop feeling angry or resentful towards someone for a perceived offense, flaw, or mistake. Now, it's actually on us. So whether or not, it is a perception. So whether or not we, God hasn't made a mistake, He doesn't have a flaw, He hasn't deliberately hurt us. But actually forgiveness is about us choosing to say to God, God, whatever the circumstances, whatever my lack of understanding, I'm blaming You for this situation. And there is a place in our faith for actually releasing God and forgiving Him for those things that have hurt us. And I say, I'm not talking about forgiveness as if God has done something wrong, but I am talking about forgiveness as allowing our spirits to release God. Because it's Him who we're putting the blame on often for a situation. And it's Him that we go, God, You could have stopped this. That is the bottom line. Because if we say on one hand that God is in control of everything, then why didn't He stop that? That's actually where our mind goes, and it's a reasonable thing to actually process on there. God could have stopped this, and He didn't. Therefore, God isn't what He said He was. He's the way that our brain works. That's a whole semester or few at Bible college to even begin to get your head around some of that. But the truth is there is a releasing that we need to do of God and say, yes, I blame You for this. I know that You could, but I trust that You have got my best interests at heart. I trust the promises that are over my life. And the more that you choose to do that, the more that you relax and surrender into that actually the more peace you will find, and you'll find hope rising afresh, even in those things that, as I say, it's counterintuitive, but it is where you will find hope. Yes. Yes. And it still happened. The things, it didn't prevent anything. Those characters, I think I spoke about this a few weeks ago. In Hebrews, it talks about all these people of faith who did not see. But that is actually what I'm talking about. It's in spite of whether we see or don't see things, it's despite of some of our experiences that we've all had where we've seen God do something, or most often not do something, that we actually choose to go anyway. We choose to say, God, I don't get this, but I trust you. And there is something very, very sweet. I mean, it's probably one of the most sweetest things that we can do for God, is in spite of the evidence against him. It's the same thing, of Peter on the night that Jesus was betrayed. He made the wrong choices in there. But it would be the same thing of saying, despite what's happening, despite my own personal feelings, despite this, I'm choosing to trust you. Because what else do I have? At the end of the day, what else do I have? And I honestly believe it's one of the sweetest things that we can do. And if Christians could get to that point quickly in their faith, it would save an awful lot of issues, I think, in our own lives, but of that sweetness of, as I say, despite it all, I choose to hope in my God in there. But you've got to wrestle. You have to individually wrestle this through. There's no bypassing this. Every one of you will have this battle of, do I choose to believe God despite my health, despite my finances, despite the fact this happened or that happened? Am I going to follow my God? And the more that you relax into it, the more that you surrender and say yes, and quickly, you will find yourself at a level of peace and actually spiritual maturity. It's all hand in hand that will just grow as you you do that. I just felt that some of you needed to hear that afresh, hear that again today. I'm not going to have a ministry time now, but I am going to play a song. And I just want you to take the time. We've got the time. It's 5 minutes, approximately 5 minutes long. Just listen, read. The words are up on the screen. And, yeah, just see what the Spirit says to you. And if, like anything, if things are being stirred up, we actually do have a prayer team. And we can, people will pray for you this morning. But we can also make time to pray with you as well. Particularly see Tani over there. Tani will wave. But we can have time for you. But anyway, I'm going to put this song on. And just stay quiet while we're watching it.